As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Teammates headbutting teammates, snow stopping play in April, a mark-out moment at Forest Green, and Phil Brown getting dressed in the dark. All that equals a standard weekend in the EFL. This is the Totally Football League show in association with Paddy Power. Hey listener, hope you're well. Maybe you're listening to us in the gym or even a beer garden. Try not to let the snow settle on your pint. If so, I'm Matt Davis Adams, here to talk all things EFL in the company of Sam Parkin.
Hello Matt, how you doing?
Yeah, I am really well, thanks, Sam. How about you, Adrian Clark?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm fine. Yeah, I would say you're looking well, but I'm just not having this Alice band. I'm sorry.
All right, I'm wearing an Alice band. We're going to be talking sartorial choices for managers later. I think the Alice band looks good. Maybe we'll put it to a poll on Twitter, but probably not. Maybe I'll just move on swiftly. Back for more. Well, she can still talk Watford on this podcast from the BBC, PLP, and other non-acronym-based broadcasters. It's KS, a.k.a. Kelly Summers. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, Matt. You'll be pleased to know I'm actually a fan of the Alice band. Controversial, but I think it looks good.
Okay, that's two votes for the Alice band. More Alice band news as we get it throughout the show. Now then, there were plenty of standout showings across the leagues this weekend, but whose was the best? Maybe this will help you decide.
Performance of the weekend.
Yes, it's time for each of us to use our allotted 15 seconds to persuade you, the listener, that our pick gave the performance of the week. Kelly, you've chosen Oxford, one of the many teams amongst the goals in the EFL this weekend. Your 15 seconds starts now.
After losing four of their last five, including a torrid Easter, Oxford bounced back at Crewe. Six goals, six different scores, five of which came in 15 minutes either side of the break, giving them their biggest ever Football League away win. Effective in the press, clinical in front of goal, and 3 points off the playoffs.
Only a second or two over the 15 seconds, not knocked off your stride by the standard Clarkie doorbell. There's a lot to like there. Good effort. Sam, you've chosen one of your old clubs, Exeter City. Your 15 seconds starts now.
Yeah, I think we've been guilty of writing off the Grecians too early. Thumped the league leaders on Saturday to get right back in the mix. Jack Sparks sparkled. Randall Williams showed his importance and Bowman notched his first in nine. And Matt Jay, well, he's unplayable right now. 1 point off the playoffs with a game in hand on most.
Not bad. Yeah, like good amount of detail in there. Adrian, you've gone for Wigan Athletic. Your 15 seconds starts now.
Yeah, Wigan kept their survival hopes alive by destroying Donny 4-1 in a rout that began with a Dodu scorcher and ended with Will Keane getting the finish his outstanding display deserved. In between, Solomon Ottebor scored for a picture-perfect passing move. This was their best performance of the season.
Ooh, perfect timing and a bit of alliteration. Plenty to enjoy there. Right, I'll round things off. I've picked Oldham Athletic. My 15 seconds starts now. Another goal fest for the Latics, who followed up their four-goal haul at Crawley by going one better here, scoring with five of their 21 shots, including a brace for Davis Keller. Done always nice to get a Davis in there. They even scored from a free kick routine described by their own website as comical. Timing. Head to @thetotallyshow on Twitter to vote. Let's championship. Championship headlines. Norwich didn't manage to confirm promotion this weekend, but need a maximum of just 2 points more to do so. The Canaries, like the rest of the top five, all won, as did Bournemouth, who move above Reading into the playoff places. Meanwhile, Birmingham were the big winners at the bottom, where defeats for Sheffield and Wickham edged the pair nearer to League One. Derby are very close to being taken over by Eric Alonso, almost as close as they are to the relegation zone, or as they were to that last guy taking over, Banter. And Swansea and Birmingham are boycotting social media for a week to highlight the continued instances of abuse and discrimination on the platforms. So many massive games in the Champo this weekend, Pass. We could have chosen any, but we've decided to focus on the race for promotion. Thus, we start at Deepdale, where after four straight draws, Brentford hit five goals past Preston with five different scorers. Adrian, change of shape and a change of some personnel here for the Bees. Franking sense from Thomas to mix it up.
Yeah, very good. He shook it up, didn't he, tactically? It was all change, really. 4-3-3 has been the Bees' way for so long now, but it was 3-1-4-2. So Ivan Toney had himself a partner in Marcus Force, who was really good in the game. And I must admit, when I saw Brentford in the flesh not that long ago, Toney did look a little bit isolated, and I think that can happen. So good idea. Obviously bold, using Mbeumo as a wing back as well. Norgaard, normally a central midfielder, dropping in into centre half. But it worked, and it was interesting. Thomas Frank afterwards said, "I really, really liked the look of this team on paper, but I loved it even more when I saw it out on the grass." So that was, you know, I'm not surprised after a 5-0 win on the back of four straight draws, just what they needed. And look, if they attack with that much swashbuckle in the weeks to come, they'll do okay. They'll make a strong case for winning the playoffs, which looked like being pretty competitive.
Yeah, we'll see if Kelly thinks they've got any chance of chasing down her Watford momentarily. First, though, Sam, I wanted you this week to be the person to lavish some praise on Ivan Toney, seeing as you were a striker too. Already five more goals this season in the Champ than he managed in League One last season. We've been bigging him up, but I feel like we should be massiving him up. He's always already equaled Pookie's total of 29 goals from two seasons ago. He's probably not going to break Guy Whittingham's record of 42, but it's absolutely phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, I don't know what I can add to what we've already said, really. He is quite old-fashioned in a way, which I really like, because I was there last Tuesday against Birmingham and I keep a close eye on him. Every centre-half he plays against will have bruises and we'll have the memory of facing him the following day, because he leaves a bit on centre-halves. He waits till the referee's assistant or the referee's not watching. And I like that about him. And in the past, maybe his weakness has been his indiscipline. But I think this season, that's not been too much of a problem. And his football is just outstanding. Brilliant hold-up player. Can run, can head it, can score all different types of goals, and above anything else, and this is hand in hand with that competitive edge, is his mentality is ridiculously strong. I think he probably feels he's ready for the Premier League right now, and that's the biggest compliment and his biggest strength, I would say. So it will happen. Hopefully it will happen with Brentford. I'd love to see another one of my local clubs playing in the Premier League, especially. So I've got friends that work behind the scenes there, stadium. It's all geared up to it. But yeah, he's been a phenomenal signing and a brilliant win at the weekend. After that limp performance that I just spoke of against Birmingham, I didn't really see this coming. So well done, Thomas Frank, for showing real guts and authority, I think, in doing what Adrian's just described.
Kelly, they're 9 points behind your Watford, who are in second, and they've played a game more. They do host the Hornets in the penultimate game of the season. But are we looking at it now in terms of keeping some form going into the playoffs? Because we saw what ended up happening to them last season when they kind of slid into the playoffs.
This isn't just me being a pessimistic fan, which is kind of my nature in general when it comes to Watford. But I don't think that race for second is over. When you look at the fixtures and the form that I was okay before with the fixtures, because Brentford and Swansea even didn't have the form. Whereas all of a sudden they go and put in statement wins this weekend. Admittedly, Preston did take points off Norwich and Swansea, let's not forget. But Swansea went away to Millwall having not scored in the four games that they'd lost in. So to score three away from home, all of a sudden those teams have got a bit of confidence. And when you look at the fixtures, Watford were 12 points clear on Friday night, Then it got cut to 9 points. Given the performances that both of those teams put in on Saturday, Swansea have played their game in hand on Tuesday night against Sheffield Wednesday. All of a sudden, that 12-point gap could be significantly cut. And when you look at the remaining fixtures, Swansea in particular are particularly kind. Brentford still have to play Bournemouth, and Bournemouth have found a bit of form. And they do still have to play Watford on the 1st of May. That's going to be huge. Final day as well. Watford have to play Swansea. So I don't think it's cut and dried with those games in hand. If Watford, of course, have the momentum with their 11 wins in 13, I think it is. But it's not cut and dried. Those games are going to be absolutely huge. I'm confident, but I'm not. I woke up with a real spring in my step on Saturday, and it was a bit more of a slow walk by Saturday night, I think.
Let's get on to your Watford then. They beat Reading by 2-0 back on Friday night. Ismaïla Sarr, the star again here. Kelly, it wasn't that long ago we had you on especially to talk about the prospect of Munoz being sacked, let me hold his manager of the month. I mean, that kind
you're
of...
You're
never,
it's, ever.
Well, quite rightly, no. But I mean, you can console yourself with the fact that you're about to get promoted. That will surely make you feel better. And this was a big win against one of those teams kind of trying to hang on to Watford's coattail.
Yeah, I'd like to preface this by saying I wasn't the only Watford fan saying that about Munoz at the time. And at that point, he wasn't getting the maximum out of these players. Fair play now, he does. He put us into the formation that works so, so well. We look so comfortable in that 4-3-3. We don't quite have the unpredictability of Brentford, but what we do have is a solid spine to that team. And we can change the odd player and it doesn't affect things too much. The fact that Troostekong Kong and Siri Alta don't play every single game, they're our first choice back too, but we could bring in Craig Cathcart. The fact that we've had Dan Gosling's been out for a bit, Tom Cleverley's been out for a bit, Zinchenko's all of a sudden come into that midfield three. So they've found a way to win even when the players haven't been fit. But you're right, this on Friday was huge, given the fact that we were quite flat against Sheffield Wednesday and Middlesbrough. Those two goals from Ismaïla Sarr. I saw someone tweet that that's what happens when you've got a player that costs as much as some clubs in the Championship are worth. Yes, of course it is. But that's the reason the hierarchy wanted to keep hold of him. Two brilliant goals. But what I really like is Reading did have plenty of chances and plenty of the ball. But I didn't ever really feel like we were going to lose. There's just a confidence bordering on arrogance, but in a good way, if you know what I mean, just a confidence in what the whole team is doing and where everyone is on the pitch. And I thought it was a masterstroke as well, bringing on Carlos Sanchez at half-time, because he really got a grip on things in midfield, because at half-time it was 2-0, but it was a chaotic 2-0.
It was Sarr who got the goals here, Adrian, but they're not a one-man team, are they, Watford? And that's been pivotal to their turnaround or their sustained success in recent weeks and months.
Yeah, definitely. I just had to chuckle to myself there. Carlos Sanchez and masterstroke used in the same sentence. Yeah. I just don't know if I've ever heard that. But
Clarkie, when we
right
brought
content.
Him in, I thought this is such a Watford signing where it's just he's going to come on for 10 minutes in one game and then we'll never see him again. But fair play, he was brilliant on Friday.
Yeah. No, it's about sort of strength as a team. I'm still not that sold on Troostekong as a centre-half, really. But the defensive record is great. I think the team defend pretty well as one, really. They remind me a bit of West Bromwich Albion Watford, not in style necessarily.
Oh,
no, when they went up last season. Not brilliant in terms of form, not amazing, not the perfect team by any stretch of the imagination, but they've got enough talent to get them through. And that's what West Brom had when they got automatic promotion 12 months ago. And yeah, I can see what... Look, Kelly's worrying over nothing. They're going up.
what about Reading, Sam? Out of the playoff picture at the moment. Tricky run into Cardiff, Luton, Swansea, Norwich amongst the teams that they've got to play. What did you make of them here?
I thought they were very good in patches, in the first half in particular. The period before half-time when they had three great chances, had they scored then, we could have been talking about a different outcome. I loved the performance of Elise and Ajaria again in particular. I thought they really stepped up on a big night in front of the national audience in a game where they kind of had to take something. I thought they really produced those two. And I'll simplify it for you, Matt, right now, because I can't see too many problems defensively, because Sarr is Premier League quality. You give that ball away in those positions against the 90% of players, 90% of teams in the Championship, they wouldn't punish you as Ismaïla Sarr did on Friday. So you have to put that into account. They need to rediscover their finishing. I think it's that simple. And obviously he's got a little bit of a a conundrum at the moment. I think Puskas has probably played himself out. Zhou will come back in. It hinges on Zhou and Mate rediscovering what they were doing in the early part of the season. If they can do that, then they've got a hell of a chance still. But of course, the way that they're missing chances to the degree that they are away at Barnsley and again at Vicarage Road, they're going to be caught by Bournemouth and they're not going to be able to catch them. So that's the big thing for me, because yes, they're a little bit down to the bare bones defensively, but I thought Holmes was excellent in the game. And I don't want to slaughter Gibson at left back because he was up against the best wide right player by a country mile in the division.
Right, so that is Bournemouth replacing Reading in the top six. Then this after the Cherries beat Coventry 4-1. Two goals in the first 3 minutes setting the tone for the afternoon here. Matty James cancelled out Danjuma's opener before the Cherries took control to move back into those playoff places. Kelly, we've already mentioned Saar and Tony, but Arno Danjuma surely in the running for Championship Player of the Season too. 13 goals and 7 assists in 28 games. They're good numbers.
Yeah, I think consistency has been an issue with him, but he's certainly finding form now and regular. And he's, for me, obviously, Ishmael Assar, I'm going to say, is one of the best, most exciting players in the Championship, but Arnott and June has got to be up there as well. And I thought he embodied everything that was so good about Bournemouth. For me, this is the Bournemouth that we all expected and hoped we'd see in the Championship. The way they, yes, they took the early goal, the electric start. David Brooks is back at a crucial time as well. I think his run, driving run for the first goal inside the opening minute was brilliant. But Danjuma, Brooks, Solanke, even Stanislas, I think, is going to be back for the game this week. They've got all of the attacking players that should click but just haven't so far. And I just think Jonathan Woodgate has just taken it back to basics for them. And the way they moved through the gears against Coventry was really impressive, I thought. And from what I hear, it's a very happy camp now as well. They like the formation. They like the training. Everything seems to be kind of clicking at just the right time for the Cherries.
Definitely. I loved how openly gutted Ben Pearson was that his shot was deflected in by Solanke towards the end of the game. He was, yes, his team had scored, but that didn't stop him showing how sad he was. On Arnaut Danjuma, I had a bit too much time on my hands this morning. Actually, I didn't, but I sort of got a bit geeky and I looked at Bournemouth with and without him this season, because he's only made 24 starts, so he's missed a lot of football. Sometimes he's been subbed, sometimes he's been injured. But they've averaged, without him, 1.43 points per game. With him, they've averaged 1.87 points per game. And where would 1.87 points per game put them in the league? 2 points above Brentford in third. They would be pushing for automatic, potentially, had he played more often.
Sam, I'll put this one to you, a tweet that's coming to us from Andy at The Totally Show if you want to get in touch. He asks, should Bournemouth fans want us to be promoted?
He doesn't want to be promoted.
I'm assuming here that the point is you win a lot more games in the Championship than you do if you're at the bottom end of the Premier League, but also you get to be in the Premier League.
He should have a look at Adam Smith's interview, I think it was, from Full Time on Saturday, who said he absolutely despises playing in the Championship because it's relentless. And I think more so that the feeling of playing behind closed doors is just driving him up the wall, I think, at this stage, which it is all of us. But it was a really good interview, actually. But yeah, I think so. I think they'd want to go back there, of course. I think they've got the foundation at the football club to probably go and strengthen and learn from the mistakes if they feel that they made some ricks last season, to solve them really when they go back to the top tier. But yeah, I mean, for me, they've finally found a formula, as the other guys were saying, which just makes them really formidable at this level. And it's taken pretty much the whole season for not just Jason Tindall, but now Jonathan Woodgate to stumble across it. But I think the formula, the shape that they're playing with at the moment makes them really strong contenders to go up by the playoffs, and doing it all without an out-and-out striker. I know we say this year after year, but I just think there's something in the Championship when you've got an even spread of goals, when you've got loads of contributors, that seems to be the way to go about it. And Bournemouth have got four or five players who are contributing consistently. So they're looking really strong right now.
In regards to that question, Matt, that was posed, I actually saw that be posed on Twitter, and I completely understand, as a fan of Watford, a team that's just been relegated.
I'm glad
last
you
year
did, Kelly.
Was hard at times. Last year was hard at times, and this year, yeah, it's been so much more enjoyable winning games. However, I'm very aware that at the end of this season, if Watford don't go up, you get assets stripped. All of your best players leave, all there to come and to get the team back into the Championship. And for the financial stability and the future of the club, unfortunately, when you do get relegated from the Premier League, there is a bit of a need to go straight back up to balance the books and things like that. So I can completely see where that fan's coming from. But I don't think next season will be as fun for the likes of Bournemouth or Watford if they don't go up, because it won't be these same exciting players. Players that stayed for a year of trying to get back up, your Dan Juma's and the like, probably won't hang around for another year.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, Andy. Otherwise, you'll end up supporting a team who've been outside of the Premier League for 21 years and counting, with absolutely no sign of that changing anytime soon. As for Coventry, Ryan Conway pointed out last time he was on that people were sleeping on them as relegation contenders. Probably time to wake up. Place above the bottom three, 6 points ahead of Rotherham, who have 3 games in hand on them. The pair meet on Thursday. That will be just 48 hours after the Millers have played QPR. Clarke, you can only term that a 6-pointer.
Feels like a 9-pointer, doesn't it? It's absolutely massive. And it's come at a bad time for Coventry. They've got problems, haven't they, at the back, injuries, illnesses. I noticed Rose and Higham were out of this game. One of their players got taken to hospital, which meant that a reserve had to come in, Jordan Thompson. So, yeah, really, really difficult end to the season for Coventry. But they've just got to get on with it and get over the line somehow. I also think they need to get Gus Hammer back into the team. He was dropped, which I found really surprising. But he came off the bench and looked okay by all accounts. So I expect him to stay in the side now. But yeah, Coventry against Rotherham, that's going to be tasty, isn't it? And Coventry have just got to hope that Rotherham are absolutely knackered from Tuesday.
Right, let's get some odds, courtesy of Paddy Power here, represented by the multi-award winning producer Abby, who's going to help us build a midweek acca. Kelly,
I don't
believe...
think I've won any awards, but anyway.
Well, you're nominated every 15 minutes. If you don't win one of them. Something's going wrong. Kelly, your pick for Araka comes from the Championship, I'm told.
Yeah, I've got a little bit rogue with it, to be honest. But I think that Rotherham to beat QPR, just because I think Rotherham have to beat QPR. Don't laugh.
Queen's Park Rangers fan Sam finds that so offensive that he's laughing sarcastically in a way that would make Jose Mourinho
blush. This is no time to go rogue, Kelly. We need a win.
I don't think that's an outrageous shout at all. I quite like that.
It's
Abby,
this
what?
Time of the season, isn't it, where teams with stuff to play for against teams that don't. And I don't think the Rotherham, I mean, they haven't had great results, but I don't think they're awful. They're not great, but... Oh, you're talking me out of it now.
No,
I'm not. I'm back.
QPR have won the last two. That's a fine bet.
It's very tight. Rotherham are 13-8, but QPR the very slight favourites at 8-5 with the draw coming in.
I really
in.
Thought I was picking something mad.
with the draw coming in at 23-10, I thought I'd look at the outrights just to ease Kelly's mind. Watford are very much more favourites than Brentford to get promoted. They're 1-12, Brentford 5-4.
1-12. Yeah, it's happening. You can stop worrying. All right, we'll carry on building that acca as we go. League One, stand by.
At Paddy Power, we know there are plenty of risks in football. Parking the bus at 1-0, signing that promising youngster for 50 million, or predicting Pep's lineups for your fantasy team. But at Paddy Power, we don't want you to take unnecessary risks. So when you sign up for a new account, you'll get your first bet up to £10 risk-free. That's money back as cash if it loses. Paddy Power. New customers only. Deposit using cards or via Apple Pay. First bet on sportsbook markets only. Minimum deposit. Max refund £10. Online exclusive. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
League One headlines. Top two, Hull and Posh, both won and extended their lead on the playoff pack, none of whom managed a victory. Charlton are just a point outside the top six after winning at Sunderland. At the bottom, Wimbledon climb out of the relegation zone after a thumping win at Accrington. And Ipswich have new owners, specifically the American investment fund ORG. Let's kick off our League One look back at the Stadium of Light, where Sunderland's defeat to Charlton means they're now 5 points off the automatic promotion places as their 14-game unbeaten run comes to an end. The Black Cats had the stats in their favour, except the important one, the scoreline. Sunderland podcaster Melissa Johnson from Wise Men say, looking at the positives, it's a punch in the stomach, but it isn't over, she says. Kelly, do you think that that's an accurate description? They've got some tough games coming up all the way. Wigan, who are revitalised, Blackpool and then Hull. But, you know, they have just been on a 14-game unbeaten run, so...
They had a lot of chances in this first half. Charlie Wyke had two really good chances before a really clumsy own goal gave Charlton the lead. But they looked a little bit shaky at the back. And I kind of thought the same in the game against Peterborough. On Easter Monday as well. They were kind of nearly undone by a couple of set pieces at the weekend as well. The defending for the second was awful as well. So I think there's a few question marks there. But as you've just said, they've been on a brilliant run. They're going to win more than they're going to lose. However, I think the fact they've got to play a very informed Blackpool twice, who arguably are the best team on current form in the division for me, and they've also got to play Hull away on Tuesday the 20th of April. So there's a couple of really tasty looking fixtures in there. I think they'll be okay, but out of the top three, Peterborough, Hull and Sunderland, I think the Black Cats have actually got the hardest run in now.
Yeah, and actually, Adrian, I was kind of minded to think, well, Sunderland usually do better against the better teams, but Kelly's mentioned that the Peterborough game, they couldn't get over the line in that one, and they've lost this to a fellow promotion chaser, so maybe that's not correct.
Yeah, no, it's... You're going to lose the odd game here and there, and Charlton, they're one of the toughest teams to play at home. Notice Charlton have got 11 away wins this season. And one standout feature of this particular win is that out of those 11 away wins, this is the first one Charlton have let a goal in. Amazing. They just keep winning to nil away from home. They're really solid under the previous manager, under Nigel Atkins as well, it seems. So it was never going to be an easy fixture. Sam touched on the centre-halves a couple of weeks ago when I sort of said that they were doing well considering they're such an unorthodox centre-back pairing. And Sam rightly said he wasn't sure if that was enough. Like, that's an area they can definitely strengthen. And it's interesting, they had a back three in this game with Power, a midfielder, alongside Sanderson, an 09. So you've got two midfielders and a young rookie that often plays right back as your back three. And I think when you're up against the likes of Jaden Stockley, you know, good player at this level, then it shouldn't be that much of a surprise if you get undone.
Sam, we collectively and figuratively scratched our heads when Lee Bowyer left and Nigel Atkins came in at Charlton. A couple of weeks later, it actually looks like it's working out quite well for all parties.
You did, Matt. I was all right with that. I thought Lee Bowyer had done his time. And I was just disappointed that my friend hadn't been given the gig, but big fan of Nigel Atkins and all his walking. Let's not get away from that. They've done brilliantly. And I spoke about it last week, the consistency in selection and tactics. You know, pick the same players if they're doing the business and simplify it. I think they're brilliant without the ball. 4-3-3 with it, 4-2-3-1. And then they drop back the five-man midfield to make it really difficult for teams to break through them. And Adrian just spoke about Jaden Stockley, who's been excellent, I think. And in all departments, you think of Innes defensively, Gilby coming in, making forward runs, and Stockley winning absolutely everything in the last couple of games that I've seen, putting that seed of doubt in the mind of the defenders that he's up against. And then when that happens, he can start taking things on his chest, bringing people into play. And that's exactly what I've seen. It's kind of the old style centre-forward play that I was always taught. Dominate early on and then you can start linking it and people playing into your feet. And that's exactly what Charlton are doing right now. And Kelly's right, though. They rode their luck a little bit in this game, but they've got a serial winner, you'd have to say, at League One level. And they're looking like a really good bet for the playoffs. And just on Sunderland quickly, they're done, I think, if they don't win at Wigan in terms of the championship. I think, you know, it's 8 points now, so they have to take maximum points in their game in hand if they've got any hopes, I think, of overturning probably Hull and Peterborough, to be frank.
Some big scores in League One this weekend, none bigger than at Gresty Road, where Oxford hit Crewe for six different goal scorers here. Sam, Brandon Barker on loan from Rangers, the standout for Oxford, you would say. Me and you saw a bit of him during his academy football days at Manchester City. Looks to me like the type of player who's built for a Carl Robinson team. You know, young so he can be moulded, but still key, tricky midfield player. Just looks like a good fit for Oxford.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, huge hand in. Was it James Henry's goal, I think, with the slaloming run and then a brilliant individual goal as well. And his performances have been really consistent as of late. The game against Lincoln, live TV game, he did very well as well. I thought he was the pick on that night. So, yeah, we spoke about how Carl Robinson likes to attack, likes to outscore opposition. And he's very much in that mould. And, yeah, used to enjoy watching him for City in the academy matches. And, yeah, probably, I think he's 23, 24 now. So probably ready to join somewhere permanently and put down some roots and play some regular football. But yeah, really good victory for Oxford. Didn't see it coming, but preyed, I suppose, on Crewe's inadequacies in terms of the way they tried to play out. And I think Carl Robinson emphasised that after the game, that they got their closing down and their pressing bang on and took advantage of some sloppy play from Crewe.
Yeah, Kelly, every week we have the debate about whether Oxford are going to make the playoffs or not. They're 4 points off at the moment. They played at least one game more than the teams currently in those playoff spots, but they've only got one top half team left to play in their run-in. So it is there for them, potentially.
I kind of feel like this summed up just how crazy this division is. The fact that they could have been on such a poor run and still be that close to the playoffs after this win. Yes, it was a brilliant win, but they're just so up and down. I think Carl Robinson said after the game, this is how good we can be when, as Sam alluded to, we get our press right and our attacking players do what they're supposed to do. As you just said there, Brandon Barker was magnificent. If they can keep these players fit and if they can perform more regularly, yes, I think they're in the mix. I think they'll fall short in the end, but when they're this good, it's hard to back against them, really.
What about Crewe then, Adrian? Worst home defeat in almost half a century. Consistently inconsistent at the moment. Last seven matches, lost one, lost one, lost one, lost. That's the kind of thing that happens to a newly promoted team in their first season in a higher division.
Yeah, they've still got a lot of good young players. They still play some nice football, but they were outgunned in this game. One shot on target, faced 11 shots on target. That's really bad, and it's not a good reflection of their shape and their discipline. Just got overran, really. Goalkeeper didn't have a good day, Jaska Leinen. And yet, when you've got a young team as well, sometimes when things go wrong, it can run away with you because you don't have that experienced spine that just allows the team to regroup. If you lack that, Things can escalate quite quickly, and I think that's what happened in this match. They're capable of winning games, but as we've seen here, they might get battered on the odd occasion too.
Last League One game I want to look at, Accrington Stanley 1, Wimbledon 5. One away win in their last 10 was Wimbledon's record until this weekend passed when they hammered struggling Aki. Too much for John Coleman, who presumably spent Friday night watching I Love 1989.
It's a bit like losing on bullseye, isn't it? You know, when you're getting the caravan taken away from you. We got ourselves in such a good position, and sometimes it's the hope that kills you. I think there's a song of "We Haven't Seen Such Riches, I could live with being poor." And that's probably sums up our season.
Speaking of Stanley, their chairman and all-round good egg, Andy Holt, tweeted this after the game. Said to at AFC Wimbledon staff before the match, "If we have to lose a game, I'd rather it be to you. You're doing a great job down there. Top club. No need to batter us, though." Shock face emoji, two crying faces emoji. Good stuff like that. Sam, you mentioned Wimbledon were unlucky to miss out on performance of the week. This result might give them some comfort.
Just a bit. Jesus Christ, how have you gone for Oldham over AFC Wimbledon? That's your second yellow of the day.
Alice, right, you can present the rest of the show.
You're off. I think, was it the first time they've scored five in the EFL? I think I heard. So really unlucky. And Accrington couldn't have the excuse of having all the players missing and all that palaver because they were all back. It was a really strong looking team that I saw take the field. So yeah, really good result for AFC Wimbledon. It's four from six, isn't it, at the bottom of that division. It's going to be a brilliant shootout. But I think the confidence, again, in getting other goal scorers, Ollie Palmer being the man at the weekend. He sat behind me at Plough Lane the other day doing commentary for the iFollow. So he's not played nearly enough football this year, but when he has played, he's produced. I think that's just his fourth start of the season. He's got four goals. So him with Piggott is, I think, what the fans have been shouting for. And they both produced and some at the weekend. So brilliant result, thoroughly deserved, and giving themselves a fighting chance in which is going to be a brilliant scrap.
It's going to be so good. It's so many more twists and turns to come. Bang on to bring up the two up front. They sort of matched up Accrington, didn't they, in a 4-4-2 diamond. And another good stat is that Wimbledon, it's the first time they've won by more than one goal all season. So they've been involved in tight game after tight game after tight game. And then they go and do that. So, yeah, massive lift for them. And for a guy like Palmer to come in and contribute is great. Ayoub Assal obviously got a couple of goals as well. So, all of a sudden, fresher look to the team, bit of confidence. They've got themselves a chance.
One thing they haven't done all season, Kelly, is win back-to-back games in the league. They've got Ipswich on Tuesday. That's half a chance to put that right, isn't it? Not in great form themselves.
Yeah, I think Ipswich have looked quite solid, but they just can't score goals. So I think this will be a far tougher test for Wimbledon because Ipswich themselves are still battling for those playoffs, whereas Accrington, I think their season now is, although they're not far off the playoffs, I think their season was kind of petering away into nothing. I think it's weird because looking at this game, the defensive errors from Accrington were pretty awful. I think it was the third goal that was just them giving the ball away by the corner flag. By that point, they'd already conceded two goals. They were on the back foot, but they were relentless. That was the word that Mark Robinson did use as well to describe Wimbledon. He said they need to do that every single week. It'll be hard to put in a performance like that every single week, but with the formation that you talked about there, the fact that Palmer and Piggott both in form, Ayoub Assal just in behind them, that attack would be hard for any defence to contain. That said, Ipswich have been good defensively. So actually, I think this is one. It's a shame we're not doing the ACCA for this game. Well, actually, it's probably a relief because I couldn't call this one, actually.
Well, it's a nice segue because you can get some odds on League One now to help build our ACCA. Sam and Adrian, your picks both come from League One. What have you gone for, Clarkie?
I've gone for Blackpool against Accrington, standing over 2.5 goals, please. Blackpool, really, really good going forward, as we know, with Yates and Elliot Sims really on fire. Accrington having a stinker defensively, we know that. 7-0, they were pumped, weren't they, by Peterborough recently, and this time 5. So yeah, I've looked at the stats. 4 of the last 5 games for Blackpool have gone over. 6 of the last 8 Accrington games have gone over 2.5 goals. So hopefully we'll get one here.
Thumbs up for some Jerry Yates goals then. Abby, what are the odds on that?
Yeah, for over 2.5 goals, it is 11-10, and Blackpool, the heavy favourites here, 7-10 to beat Accrington, who are 15-4.
Sam, your pick comes from League One as well?
Yeah, my workings aren't as nearly as sophisticated as Clarkie's. I think Lincoln, maybe this could be a turning point for them, getting the 2 goals back against Blackpool. So they got Johnson back and Morton as well, who've been missing. So I think they'll score. And MK haven't scored in 2 games. And I like watching them. They're a good side and not much pressure. I'd say their thirst and hope of a playoff finish this season is probably not going to materialise. So they maybe be on the beach, but hopefully someone with flip-flops on will bend one in the corner.
What are the odds on that happening? Not the flip-flops part, Abby.
Can't do anything on flip-flops. Both teams to score, Lincoln MK is 13-20, and Lincoln are the favourites at 11-8 with MK Dons 9-5. What I should say is our treble at the moment is coming in at 8.1-1.
Nice. We'll finish it off soon when we get to League Two. That comes next.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner StubHub has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League Two headlines. Forest Green have sacked Mark Cooper after six matches without a win. They sit sixth in the table. More on that imminently. Cambridge dropped to second after a shock shellacking at home by Exeter. Cheltenham are the new top boys after squeezing past Orient. Southend unleashed the beast in question being Phil Brown's cravat. And on the 10th of April, Port Vale's match with Morecambe was suspended for 45 minutes because of snow. A word then on the dismissal of Mark Cooper. Harsh is one that springs to mind. Sam, do you think there's more to this than meets the eye?
I honestly don't know. I'd be lying if I said I haven't felt it's been a strange marriage between Dale Vincent and Mark Cooper throughout the last few years. Listen, I spent a bit of time with Mark Cooper when he was the Swindon manager, when I was just out of the game, and he was brilliant with me. So I can only take him at that, really. But, you know, I do understand that he's had a few run-ins with people and that he's been a bit prickly with some journalists during his tenure. Whether that's got something to do with it, I don't know. On the pitch, they play brilliant football. There's just been too much of a churn in terms of the squad from season to season to get any real consistency. And obviously the hunger of the owner to get them up is really strong. He believed they'd probably have done it by now, and the results have been desperate recently. So maybe it's one that just inevitably and maybe naturally has reached its end.
Kelly, they've gone for under-18s coach Jimmy Ball on an interim basis till the end of the season. He's the son of Alan Ball, the England World Cup winner. Is it odd to give the gig to somebody who hasn't managed a first team before, or sensible to give it to somebody who knows the club and the players?
Depends which way you look at it. And this is probably more one to pose to Clarkie and Sam, who have played, because you can look at it in two ways. And it's a little bit different, but what Doncaster did with Andy Butler and the way they've fallen away, and you wonder if they'd done what Charlton had done when Lee Bowyer left and went in and got some experience and someone that knows how to get them out of the division. That's the only thing that worries me a little bit. But yeah, you flip it on its head and say, well, at least he knows the players, and with so few games left, how well will he know the players from coaching the under-18s? That's the other thing I'd ask. They probably don't train together, especially with COVID bubbles and the like. So yeah, the more I think about that one, the more I think it's a bold decision, because it's a big job to turn around. It's not a big job, but Forest Green, they've fallen away, haven't they? They've really struggled, and it's something they've done for quite a while now. So yeah, I'd question why you wouldn't bring in someone with a bit more nous.
It's a roll of a very strange dice, isn't it? I mean, if by taking Mark Cooper out and bringing the youth team manager in, just by virtue of the change of voice, provokes an uplift in form that gets them over the line into the playoffs. They will go into the playoffs with a manager that has zero experience, up against very good managers at this level that have worked on everything all season. I think it puts them at a distinct disadvantage, really, in those close games, in playoff matches, often very tactical affairs, I find. And yeah, just to put someone in at the deep end that, you know, okay, it might work, but I would say the odds of it working are quite slim, to be honest. There's a reason why he hasn't been the first team manager up until this point. It's a reason why he's been looking after the under-18s. It's not to say he can't do it, but for me, it's the longest of long shots, just to put your faith in someone like this for now.
Dale Vince tweeting today, we've got over 70 CVs overnight from some great male and female coaches. We'll take our time and take a different direction. We'll be looking for a progressive and more modern approach to the game. Let's get to the action on the pitch in League Two then. The big bout at Valley Parade. Bradford beat Grimsby by 1-0 to maintain their promotion push, but that's not what people were talking about at full time. This after Mariners man Stephen Payne headbutted his own teammate Felipe Moraes in front of the ref as the players trundled off at the end of the first half. Clarkie, we don't normally see this stuff happen actually on the pitch. I mean, Lee Bowyer, Kieran Dyer, Graham Lasso, and David Batty, and there it ends. This is not a good look when it happens in full view of the iFollow cameras.
No, it doesn't. It's not a good look. You're right. It doesn't give the impression that the players are together as one. But look, it's also a massive sign of frustration that you can lose it like that in full glare of everybody. Not good at all. It was interesting that he also substituted Philippe Meret. So he was equally unhappy with the guy that didn't get sent off as well. So yeah, look, they're just going to have to regroup, aren't they, this week on the training ground and be together. Wouldn't surprise me if these two, though, are ostracised and that's them done. Because you've got to have players you can trust, especially at the moment with every point counting for Grimsby. The manager can't be worried about one of his players letting the side down. So yeah, I think they're, well, one suspended, the other one I would imagine will be dropped. I was headbutted by a teammate in what? Training.
right, but, okay.
Yeah.
What did you do?
My old man and Adrian Clark.
Yeah, I could be quite a bad winner sometimes. And I think we were playing a five-a-side and I was being really chirpy. I was sort of gloating about, I was bouncing, chucking a few nutmegs in here and there. And just one of the lads just really I obviously totally got on his nerves and he came for me. But it was something that had been brewing. We hadn't been getting on particularly well. And he just came for me and headbutted me in training. And I was in such a shock that it had happened that I didn't even take a swing back. Like, I was just like, what? What just happened? So, yeah, and then nothing really did happen after it. But, yeah, so kind of a little bit of experience of it.
Sam, you ever been the John Hartson to Clarkie's Isle Berkovich?
Oh, no, not me. No. Just stand from a distance and laugh when it happened in training. I remember a good one at Walsall, actually. Surprise, surprise, I was doing some rehabilitation behind one of the goals with John Whitney, who became the Walsall manager, and Jamie Vincent, who I'm sure Clarkie will remember and probably played against, tough tackling left back, yeah. And Manny Smith, who was a tough tackling centre half, just went at it. They were getting battered in the five-a-side game. And normally players run in and there's a big huddle and it gets stopped. They had a 3-minute round. It was unbelievable. And Jamie was staying on my sofa quite often. We were travelling up and down from London. And he was absolutely devastated because Chris Hutchins done him 2 weeks' wages. It was genius. It's all I heard. We were like walking around the ball ring in Birmingham for the next fortnight and he was absolutely beside himself. So I don't know what the outcome was, but that was a real heavyweight bout.
Kelly, we hear this kind of thing goes on in dressing rooms up and down the land all the time. Is it the same in the broadcasting game? You ever stuck the nut on Garth Crooks before a Football Focus?
Funnily enough, no. And I wouldn't dare do it to Garth Crooks or any. I'm a bit like, I'm the Clarkie of the broadcasting world. Well, Clarkie's in the broadcasting world now. I'd like to think I'm quite mild-mannered. I'm not particularly bold. Years ago when I played on the netball court, I would give it. Because I knew that no one was going to come and punch me because it's not that kind of sport. But no. Any sign of a fight and I'm off.
Not much fight about Cambridge this weekend, he said, segueing. They lost 4-1 at home to Exeter. Cambridge knocked off top spot as a result of this. Randall Williams back on the team sheet for the first time since Boxing Day. Sam, you alluded to it in your performance of the week. He's been a big absentee for them.
Yeah, and Mark Bonner was really complimentary about Exeter, actually, which was quite unusual after the game, picking out him, picking out the front two of Bowman and Matt Jay for praise. But I think having, you know, spoken to Matt Taylor on this podcast, he alluded to the fact that he wanted real pace and energy in his side this season. And unfortunately, it was kind of taken away from him having, you know, missed Randall Williams for so much of the season. So I think just his presence more than anything at the weekend occupied Cambridge. And I thought the interesting thing was, you know, reading all the reports and all the reaction was Exeter have faltered in those games when they've been bashed up, really. The game at Cheltenham springs to mind when they just went under. And in this game, when a team tries to out-football them, they don't come a cropper because they've got some brilliant footballers themselves, Exeter City. And this was them at their absolute best. And Matt Taylor,
I think he does this quite a lot as well, changing the shape in the second half just to see games out, and he did that to really good effect again. But yeah, I ruled them out a little bit last week. I think we all did. So yeah, I think probably another playoff campaign could be in the offing for the Grecians, certainly.
Yeah, didn't see this one coming, Matt, at all. I think that Matt Taylor not deserves credit because he kind of went with the formation that he's always been going with. It was a good matchup then. Let's just say that, because Cambridge went with the 4-4-2 diamond, and it can really work. We've seen that with Luton down the years and other teams when you nail it. But as a winger, I used to be a winger. I used to quite like playing against a diamond. You had that little bit more space because the opposition were very narrow. And if you switch play really quickly to the wide players, on this occasion, Randall Williams and Sparks on the other side, you can have a lot of time to run at your man 1v1. And if you cast your mind back to the Sparks goal from sort of 30 yards, he just had acres to run into. And that, I think, is partly a byproduct of the way the team's shaped up. But yeah, great win. But I don't think it would derail Cambridge, who, by the way, that's their first defeat on a Saturday since December the 19th. They've only ever lost in midweek since then.
Clarky, so, I had that stat.
Yeah,
I knew you'd outstat me always, every week.
Have you got any other stats you'd like to throw in about it, Kelly?
No, it was the only one I had. I thought Cambridge played quite well in this game, actually. But I actually thought it was the timing of Exeter's goals that really killed them. I thought that when they pulled one back, they were kind of in the ascendancy. And then when it got to 3-1, it just kind of it killed them, really. But I agree that I don't think this will derail them. I think it was just one game, one blip, and all credit to Exeter.
Won the boat race on a Saturday, didn't they, Clarkie?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not all bad.
Real quiz. Yeah, yeah. Abby, you have
boat,
said
boat race was actually on a Sunday.
Won the boat race on a Sunday, though, didn't they, Clarkie?
Hey, good shape. Right, odds for League Two. Let's complete this acca, Abby. I have chosen Salford against Bolton, both teams to score, on the basis that I think that both teams will score in the game between Salford and Bolton. What are the odds on that?
Yeah, it's 10 to 11 for both teams to score in this game. Salford at 8 to 5 to win, Bolton 17 to 10, and the draw coming in at 21 to 10. Now, what does this mean for our acca? I can tell you that altogether we are at 16.36 to 1 this week.
Wow. Okay. You can find out these odds and more on the Paddy Power app or paddypower.com. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. Be gamble aware, and when the fun stops, stop. That'll just about do it for this week. But in homage to Phil Brown's Clubber and my Alice band, let's build the ideal managerial outfit for the touchlines/catwalks of the EFL. I'll kick us off. I'm going for Brian Clough's green jumper. Sam, you're putting a coat over that. Is that going to be a colour clash?
Mate, that's going to go beautifully. It's going to be rascal. It's like stag do here. Laurie Sanchez, Wickham Wanderers FA Cup run, which I was involved in, he wore this cream floor-length jacket. It was a bit like Minder-esque. And around the same time, my mum had one that was similar. So whenever I was visiting, my brother and my sister were there or whatever, going out for a walk, we'd always go, get the Laurie Sanchez on, mum, like that. And she knew exactly what we were on about, and off we'd go. And it's synonymous with that game against Leicester when Roy Essendo scored, because he'd been sent off, and it's soaked as well when he's celebrating in the tunnel with Alan Parry, I think might have been present as well. But anyway, it was a rascal.
Happy days. And actually, Clark, it might work quite well with your choice of trousers.
Absolutely, yeah. You've got to go. If you're going to wear that sort of cream trench coat look with a green jumper underneath, you have to go, surely, with the Carlos Corberan spray-ons, don't you? The grey/beige chino look, I think, would be perfect. I was through the course of this, because I just wanted to remind myself of what those spray-ons look like. So I Googled it. And it popped up on Huddersfield Live's website. This was at the time when they were winning games. They had a Cream Chinos newsletter going on. We'll bring you all the best and latest trouser news and analysis to your inbox. Latest features, nostalgia, opinions. We bring you the best coverage of Carlos Corberan's legs. What exactly is the difference between cream and beige? How do we feel about white jeans? And aren't New Balance trainers an integral part of the look? How do I sign up? It's quite remarkable.
They say local papers are struggling for content these days. Not a bit of it over in that part of Yorkshire. Right, so Kelly, we've got Brian Clough's jumper covered in Laurie Sanchez's coat with Carlos Corberon's trousers. How are you going to top this off? Let's accessorise.
I was going to be biased and say Cisco Munoz is always incredibly white trainers, but it's a bit boring. Do we not think we should just have a Tony Pulis cap on the top just to kind of cap good it all shout. Off? I just feel like that will just make it a bit more, this is a serious manager. We've got to take him serious because he's wearing Tony Pulis's hat, regardless of everything else.
Go Pulis hat and Pulis trainers because they're definitely bought during one journey to JJB, aren't they?
and who doesn't like a cap with a cravat?
Yeah, cap and cravat would be a strong look. I mean, altogether, you know, I think that's a lovely image. It certainly certainly bamboozle the opposition team, that's for sure. Right, many thanks to you, Kelly, Sam, Adrian and producer Abby for their excellence today. George and Ali are here with Extra Time on Thursday. We'll be back same time next week. For now though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.